victory for the White House, defeat for the Democrats, but they knew it was coming. They are going to have to wonder whether voters are going to punish them or praise them for having pursued this impeachment struggle against Donald Trump over the last several months. As we saw during the State of the Union address last night, Donald Trump now supremely confident that the way is clear for him to head out on the campaign trail, battle for re-election, and take on whichever of the Democrat candidates ultimately comes his way.
Hollywood actor Kirk Douglas has died at the age of 103. He's best known for his role in 1960's Spartacus. He was also the father of actor Michael Douglas. US media critic Ted Baer says Kirk Douglas always defied convention.
What an age. And he was at the end of the golden age of Hollywood, not the beginning of it. He went independent after being under a studio. Kirk made a career out of going independent. He said in one of his comments that he was always angry and his anger propelled him. So he was a hero, Lonely on the Brave, and all those movies were cutting against, society. But he was a great, great actor.
Belgium's Prime Minister Sophie Wilmès has made her first official visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo. She's scheduled to open the Belgian consulate in the DRC's southeastern city of Lubumbashi and discuss bilateral issues with Congolese President Félix Tshisekedi. Chris Ochambringa with that report from Kinshasa.
The Belgian Prime Minister arrived in the DRC capital with a delegation of senior officials. Sophie Wilmès is scheduled to reopen the Belgian consulate in the southeastern city of Lubumbashi. The consulate was closed in 2018 by former President Joseph Kabila. Her visit is the first that a Belgian Prime Minister has made to the DRC in almost a decade. The relationship between the DRC and its former colonizer was strained during the tenure of former President Joseph Kabila. The Belgian government fell out with Mr. Kabila over the delay in holding elections. It consequently cut aid and suspended military cooperation. But President Félix Tshisekedi has renewed relations between the two countries.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Ollie Barrett there. Thank you, Ollie. I'll be taking your phone calls and your Skype calls in the second hour of today's programme. Bit short notice. Only mentioned it this morning. I don't doubt, though, we will get calls. I look forward to them. Before that, in the first hour, Chuck Ocelli from the Ocelli Effect. Great guy, Chuck. And he's not been on for ages. Joins us live from the east coast of the US. We'll get his take on all things Donald Trump impeachment and the response and all the rest of it. It's Thursday's Richie Allen radio show. How are you? Are you well?
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, no messing around today, I tells you, Chuck Ocelli, and then I'll be taking your calls. Now, I do put the meme, there's only one meme, and on it is the phone number and the Skype contact, which is Chat with Richie, all one word. If you're on Skype, look for Chat with Richie, all one word. It isn't open, and it won't be open till about 6 o'clock or 5 past 6. I'll take your calls. The landline number inside the UK is 0161 818 2018. 0161 818 2018. And as usual, we'll give preferential treatment to people we haven't heard from before. Do vent your spleen, talk to me about anything. Medicinal cannabis, I don't know, sex abuse inquiry, Trump, anything. You can talk to me about anything. I'm that sort of guy. Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester, Thursday, February 6th. And yeah, lovely, lovely. Lovely. Right, loads to tell you about. Have I? I do. I've loads to tell you about. Right, yeah, and I'm looking forward to catching up with Chuck. Said that already. Coronavirus. Three people have it in the UK now. Three people. Well, it's been alleged that three people have been diagnosed with it. Now, by my calculations, and this is a conservative estimate, because I did three as a percentage of 60 million, and there are more than 60 million people in the UK. That is, three people having coronavirus, that is 0.00000049999% of the population. Run! Yeah, Jesus, eh? Coronavirus. We're not going to waste any more time on that. Chuck might have some thoughts on coronavirus. We'll find out when he joins me in 20 minutes or thereabouts. Very good interview on Adam Bolton's Sky News programme this morning. Very good. Remember, I've mentioned to you the film Dark Waters, the movie, as they say in the US, the movie Dark Waters. It stars Mark Ruffalo, Anne Hathaway, and Tim Robbins. It's very, very good. And it's about the real, genuine, absolutely true legal fight between Robert Billott, the lawyer who represented residents of Parkersburg in West Virginia, because their water supply was poisoned by the DuPont, well, corporation. And it affected over 70,000 people there and many more animals as well. They were knowingly DuPont dumping toxic chemicals into the river and polluting and ultimately killing people. They knew this. And it's an amazing story because Robert Billott actually was a defense attorney who worked on behalf of big corporations most of the time. It's an amazing twist, really. He used to defend these corporations. But a farmer known to his mother, or his grandmother, in fact, said to him, "Something is going on, my cattle are dying." And he got involved and began to sue DuPont. It's a very good film because it sticks to the facts and it's very, very prescient, I would say. Here's Adam Bolton with the real-life Robert Billott, the lawyer, played by Mark Ruffalo. And Bolton asks a very good question.
In essence, the story is that DuPont, one of the world's biggest chemical companies, was knowingly poisoning the local community in West Virginia through the water supply and the air.
That's right. It was a chemical called PFOA that was used in their manufacturing of Teflon in West Virginia that was being emitted out into the Ohio River, into the air for decades. And we were able to figure that out through this case and then realized the chemical wasn't just there in West Virginia. It was in the entire community's drinking water. And then we realized it was in water all over the country, all over the planet, in the blood of virtually every person now on the planet.
So you've got some compensation for a limited number of people as a result of your legal cases. Have you cleaned up? Have we cleaned up the community, the world, do you think?
You know, unfortunately...
Wait till you hear what he says now.
Fortunately, we're just now at the point where people are beginning to understand that these chemicals even exist out there. And that's one of the things I'm really glad to see with the movie coming out, with the book coming out, that people are beginning to understand these PFAS chemicals, what we call PFOA is part of this class of PFAS chemicals. They're everywhere. They're all over the planet. They're here in the UK as well. So we're just now starting to realize that they're there. Testing is just starting to find them in the water and in the soils. And people are just now trying to figure out, what do we do about it? How do we get these out of our environment? Because once they're out there, they stay virtually forever in the soil, in the water, until they're removed. So people are now referring to these as forever chemicals.
Forever chemicals. And we've all had Teflon saucepans and frying pans, Teflon clothing. Every single one of us on planet Earth has been exposed to it. Forever chemicals, he said. Bolton asks him, or in fact allows him, to explain just how deadly and prevalent these chemicals still are. This is very important.
But the issue is as far as danger to health, is concentration, isn't it?
Correct. And what happens, unfortunately, these chemicals have a unique ability, once humans are exposed to them, to get into us, to stay in our blood, and to build up over time. They persist and accumulate.
Imagine that. Listen to what he says there again and think about everything you've ever heard on this program. From people like Jim Mars, rest in peace, God love him. David Icke, Jordan Maxwell, Ilana Freeland. I could be here all day. Maria Heller. Remember everything they ever said about an agenda to destroy the human race. And listen to what he says about these chemicals here.
And to build up over time. They get into us to stay, once humans are exposed to them, to get into us, to stay in our blood, and to build up over time. They persist and accumulate, and they circulate throughout our bodies. They have a unique ability, once humans are exposed to them, to get into us, to stay in our blood, and to build up over time.
A unique ability to get into us, to build up in our blood, stay over time. It's almost like somebody, well, dare I say it, planned it to be that way.
Persist and accumulate, and they circulate throughout our bodies. And through the litigation out in West Virginia, in Ohio, we were able, through independent scientists that were brought together, confirm that drinking that chemical, PFOA, was linked to 6 different diseases, including 2 types of cancer, which is why red flags are now being raised all over the world to exposure to these chemicals and related ones.
Yeah, he goes on to say, you can find that interview on Sky's website. He goes on to say that when the chemicals were exposed as being deadly carcinogens, the bastard corporate giants made worse chemicals. They went on to make even worse chemicals. Many of them were not even aware of, nor what they might be doing to us, to our bodies. Incredible. Mad stuff. 5:12. Have you ever been street harassed? Someone's shouting at you in the street, sexually suggestive street harassment. Women? No, any street harassment there? Campaigns are afoot to stop street harassment in the UK.
Get your tits out, get your tits out, get your tits out for the lads.
Yeah, stuff like that. Right, get your tits out for the lads. You're walking down the street and somebody says something sexually suggestive to you, or the wolf whistle at you. No need for that clip again. I hear you. I hear you. Gina Martin is at the forefront of a campaign to stop street harassment. She made a name for herself because she was the woman who successfully had upskirting criminalised. Upskirting is when perverts use their mobile phones to take a photograph from the ground up a woman's skirt. Shocking stuff. And absolutely right. It should be criminalised. She was on Radio 5 Live this morning with a couple of very woke presenters, and she said, amazingly, that she has a checklist that she goes through before leaving the house because of street harassment. Gina Martin.
It's not just about the moment in which you get street harassed, it's about the way in which it shapes our lives.
Yeah.
So every single time I leave the house, I'm thinking, what am I wearing? Is it dark outside? You know, does someone know where I'm going and when I'm going to get there? Shall I text my friend to make sure she knows when, you know, if I'm walking back from a party? I always have someone that I'm meant to text, who's meant to know that I'm getting back safely. And what that does is it really, you know, it's what Gemma was saying, you know, it's a weight on our shoulders. And it's not a weight on adult women's shoulders. It's also a weight that we're putting on girls as young as, you know, like Gemma said, as young as 11. And that is a huge thing to carry, you know, every single time you leave the school, leave the house. And it's not just at night, it's when you go to school, because as you'll hear later from Plan UK, it's now, you know, studies finding that a third of schoolgirls in the UK in their school uniform have been street harassed.
So a third of schoolgirls in their school uniforms have been street harassed. Studies are showing, she said. Of course, the hopelessly inept BBC Radio 5 guy, whose name is Nihal something or other, doesn't ask her which particular studies are those and can I see them, please. Because, listen, I know that people can be arseholes. Hey, listen, I can be an arsehole with the best of them myself. But I don't believe that schoolgirls, a third of them, are being harassed with sexually suggestive language as they go about their business. I just don't believe it. Maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm wrong, but I would at least ask her, show me the studies. How many people were surveyed? Where did you do the study? Etc., etc. Street harassment.
So that's happening in daylight, on their way to school, clearly underage girls.
But it's so weird you say that, because Barney has just tweeted me 50 seconds ago saying, fully support this campaign against street harassment. I'm often shocked when my daughters tell me about being whistled or shouted at in the street by adult men, often while wearing their school uniforms.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, we're really keen to emphasise the fact that this conversation is often not happening with men. And we really want to bring men into the conversation, because
you've come to the right place. You've definitely come on 5 Live to the right place.
Well, you've come to the right place, said the very woke presenter, Nihal, whoever he is. Do your job, man. Do your job. Don't allow her claim that a third of schoolgirls are being harassed. Right? With wolf whistles and sexually suggestive comments. At least ask her to prove it, for fuck's sake. That's a street harassment. Hi to Natalie. Rarely catching it live. Rarely does she catch it live. She's buggered off work today early for the, well, for her own reasons. But it allows her to catch the programme live. Hi to Laurie, who's a West Virginia native. Heard the state mentioned. Not almost heaven. John Denver lied, she said. Well, certainly, when you look at those people affected by DuPont dumping toxic chemicals into their water, you're absolutely right there. Street harassment, eh? Right, we'll leave that one there. You know, I mentioned Julia Hartley Brewer on yesterday's radio show. I like her a lot. I think she's a very good presenter. I don't often agree with her personal opinions, which doesn't matter a damn at all. And she's not shy of expressing or proffering her personal opinions, but I think she's a very, very good presenter. Bit of a throwback. And today, well, she reiterated, well, at least in my mind anyway, why she's a good presenter in a sea of absolute shite. She had the Transport Secretary Grant Shapps on her programme. He was talking about the plans to ban the sale of petrol and diesel cars from 2035 to save us all, you see. To save us all from climate doom. Anyway, he was on there and he was talking about electric buses as well and £170 million for new electric buses. And Grant Shapps was foolish, you see, because he didn't realise he was speaking to a good presenter. And he dropped in a bullshit statistic about deaths, about people dying because of exposure to diesel vehicles. And Julia Hartley Brewer, well, she only owned his arse.
In London, quite a lot of the buses now are pure electric, and it is. I mean, it's, you know, you can taste the air, can't you, when these diesels are running around? And it's I think it's absolutely essential we do move to this. I think the figures are something like between 26,000 and 36,000 people die each year from toxic fumes.
No, they don't. You're a cabinet minister, Grant Shapps. You should know the actual figures. That's an absolute nonsense, made up figure.
Get in there, love.
And I'm genuinely.
Go on. NO2 from toxins?
No. That figure is equivalent lives lost over a year, and it's an estimate. It's from a supposedly reputable organisation. It's an estimate. Those figures, to say that 26,000 people die as a result of this, it's absolute abject nonsense.
Well, as you say, it's an estimate, but I don't think it's
so. No, it's an estimate of equivalent lives lost.
No, it's an estimate, but he didn't say that, did he, at the start? No, he said it's true that between 26,000 and 36,000 people die because of diesel vehicles. I love when a presenter does his or her job.
So this is the difference between you and I sitting in a care home at the age of 95 and living 2 weeks less.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know about you. I could manage having 2 weeks less in return for having good transport around my capital city.
I can see we're going to have a sort of how many people die from toxins face-off here.
We're going to have a how many people die from toxins face-off here. This is as she said, a cabinet minister. He's wretched, isn't he, Grant Shapps? You're not backpedalling there, Grant. You're owned, my friend, you're owned.
I will come back with you with all of the facts from my casual comment, but I think it's pretty...
From my casual comment?
Pretty undeniable.
No, that's the problem. That's the problem, is that lots of people... Sadiq Khan does this as well. Lots of cabinet ministers, people are spouting these things as if they are fact. That is quite simply not true.
You don't think it's...
Horseshit, isn't it, Julia?
No, it's not a question of I don't think it's true. It's a paraphrasing that is meaningless. People have... It's equivalent lives lost, not people... 26,000 people do not die every year because we've got diesel and petrol
from
cars.
They do not die
as a result. They do not. People die from lung cancer because they smoke. People die from other respiratory diseases. It's got nothing to do with there being cars on the road.
Yes! I love that because I was Julia Hartley Brewer. I jumped all over the likes of him in my commercial days, in my MSM days. They hated me because of it. I wasn't Jeremy Paxman, I wasn't rude, but I annihilated the fuckers because I did my homework. And sadly, of course, these days, presenters are useless. Nothing but lumps of jelly wobbling around in a studio with producers giving them little tidbits of information in their ear. Presenters don't do the work. She's old school, does the work, and handed Grant Shapps his arse to him, neatly wrapped up with a lovely ribbon on top. There you are, you bullshitter. And Sajid Javid does it as well. You all do it. You just make up facts and figures on the fly, and you get away with it most of the time. But today you are stupid enough to be on my radio show. I love that. I love you, Julia. Right, it's 20 minutes past the hour. The BBC licence fee. The Conservative MP Peter Bowen. Now, the Tories have a hard-on for the BBC. Oh, Jesus. That's an American colloquialism. Got a hard-on for the BBC. They're pissed off with the BBC because they believe that the BBC has an anti-Tory bias. Does it? I don't know. I know the BBC is institutionally biased. no doubt, is institutionally pro-establishment, no doubt. But there is this talk that there will be a consultation on whether or not to decriminalise non-payment of the licence fee. Peter Bone was on LBC Radio. Peter Bone again, a Conservative Party MP. And he was on with Ian Dale. And Bone gets stuck right into the beeb.
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to get rid of the licence fee. Why should I, who probably not want to necessarily listen to the BBC, why would I have to pay for it? I mean, Question Time, in the run-up to Brexit, year they had a panel of five people. You're lucky if you had one Brexiteer on it.
Tell me about it.
I've never, ever been invited on Question Time. It is biased. And tomorrow in the House of Commons, I will be introducing a bill to have a commission to look at the impartiality of the BBC if we're going to continue to have a state broadcaster. But
That's very interesting now. A bill will come before the House of Commons. A bill that will propose setting up a commission to examine whether the BBC is impartial or not. Now, that obviously throws up a lot of red flags, and well, it should. We don't want government, ultimately, you know, looking into whether or not a broadcaster is impartial or not. The BBC is dreadful, we know this. But again, there is a problem when politicians come together and say, we think this organisation is biased against us. We can't have that, however bad the BBC is. I think you understand it, right?
But why should I be forced to pay a licence fee?
Exactly. Why should anybody be forced to pay a licence fee? Good man.
Licence fee when I subscribe to other channels, take away the licence fee, make it subscription.
Well, is it not a good idea, though, for there to be an independent, impartial broadcaster providing independent news and current affairs? I mean, I would say there are parts of the BBC that you could actually hive off that they don't need. A lot of the entertainment stuff is being done by other people. Does that need to be done by the BBC? Their public service remit is to inform, educate and entertain.
But they are biased, Ian.
They're not doing it.
That's
a matter of opinion, isn't it?
They were institutionally for Remain, and they don't know it.
Remainers think the exact opposite.
Well, exactly. Just take my one example of Question Time.
Well, you can't have one example. No, you've got to look at it over.
In my humble opinion, they're biased, but why not have a commission to see if they are impartial?
But you see, let's not go on about Question Time, but the panels, you may think, and I would probably have some agreement with you, that they were biased towards Remain over the past couple of years. But the audiences, you cannot say that the audiences were.
You can. I've watched Question Time many times, and I can say without fear of contradiction, the audiences were heavily weighted, heavily weighed down even, with Remainers. Anyway, look, what does it matter? It matters not a damn. 24 minutes past the hour. Remember, I will be taking your calls in the second hour of this programme. I look forward to hearing from you. The BBG, not the BBC. You can chat with me about anything. It can be a medical thing. It can be politics. Come on and have a chat with me. We'll try and get as many calls as we can through. If you're on Skype, it won't cost you a dime or a penny or a pfennig, because it's Chat with Richie on Skype. That's all one word. There is no T in Richie. Chat with Richie, all one word, is my Skype name. To phone the programme, it is 0161 818 2018, 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from outside the country, it's +44 161 818 2018. The BBG, not the BBC, Europe's most listened to independent radio show, with Richie Allen, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. I love you, and I love chatting with you. Can't wait to chat with Chuck Acelli. He's on the other side of this from Eric Clapton. Welcome to the programme. Eric Clapton, Slow Hand on the Richie Allen radio show. 26 minutes past the hour, Forever Man. Keep those tweets coming in. Lovely to hear from you today. Thursday's programme, last live radio show of the week. Of course, Sunday View this coming Sunday at 11 a.m. UK time. Couple of things just before we welcome Chuck back to the programme. Watch Israel very closely. Tension rising there, obviously because of Donald Trump's intervention and Trump's nonsensical peace plan offering, obviously rejected out of hand by the Palestinians. And I've been looking at I've been following Israel, Palestine for years and years. The Israelis are due to carpet bomb Gaza. I hope it doesn't happen, but watch it closely. Watch it very, very closely. Mitt Romney, former presidential candidate, the former Republican nominee defeated by Barack Obama, of course, is getting it in the neck because he voted to impeach Donald Trump, didn't he? Yesterday he voted, well, he basically said guilty on the two counts of impeachment faced by Donald Trump. There was no danger whatsoever that Trump would be found guilty because in the Senate you need two-thirds majority and the Senate is, of course, controlled by the Republicans. Jim Fetzer was on this programme the other day saying that there are other things that you could have impeached Donald Trump for, real crimes committed by the man. Anyway, let's welcome back to the programme a friend of ours, terrific broadcaster, great conversationalist. You can find him at his website, ocelli.com, The Ocelli Effect, which is a terrific programme. I can't recommend it highly enough. Delighted that he's back with us today to talk about these issues and others. Chuck Ocelli, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Richie, thank you so much for having me back on. I appreciate you. I appreciate your program. And I appreciate the fact that there are a few people not scared to have me back on their shows. So you are one of those very few, you, Maria Heller, and, well, nobody else right now, but that's okay.
I'm very well, mate. Thanks for asking. Let's stay with that for a minute. Is that because I regard you as a journalist, you're old school in the way you go about what you do, which I appreciate. You deal in facts. You're not scared to be criticised. If you find something out that contradicts something you previously thought, you're happy to correct yourself. This is old school stuff. And you're saying that increasingly as time goes on, you're finding it difficult to get onto programmes to talk about these things. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. I'll give you an example. I do this thing where I'm always fact checking. I cannot stop. And I insist that people that make assertions on my show, at least have a relative reason for making their argument that is based in something that resembles evidence. I mean, so this is apparently a sticking point with some people. Now, it's funny. First of all, one assertion you made there, I need to correct you on your own show, Richie. I'm sorry.
Two, go ahead.
Mitt Romney only voted to impeach the president on one count of impeachment. The other one, he voted to acquit him.
Thanks, Chuck. You're absolutely spot on. I should have said that. Well done. You're absolutely spot on. Is that significant, Chuck?
In a way, yes, because he has 5 years left in the Senate. It's not as though they're going to primary him out or run campaigns against him. There's going to be a bit of a backlash here, obviously, because, well, you know, Trump throws his fits on Twitter and makes sure to, get in his jabs where he can. This is typical. But you know what? What kind of an attention span do these people have? Not much of one. So Mitt Romney's problems will be forgotten, maybe mentioned again 5 years from now after the second Trump presidency goes through again, because that's a fait accompli, number one. Number two, I'm shocked because I have to agree with Jim Fetzer. Which is a rare occasion, my friend. Okay.
Yeah.
There are things that if the Democratic Party here in the United States, I mean, listen to how enthusiastically I'm saying that, by the way. If they wanted to go after Trump for some real criminal activity, there's stuff that is public knowledge that could have easily been brought up as impeachable offenses, violations of the public trust, high crimes and misdemeanors all over the place, including, but not limited to, the beneficiaries of his family and his own personal business through his government position at various points. That could have been done, but the Democrats, because they're not really in opposition.
Is that Chuck. Is that nepotism that's understandable? I mean, doesn't every man or woman who achieves, a very high office, don't they do things for their family and friends? Is that something we should accept? I mean, or is it more serious than that with Trump?
Well, it's more serious than that. Again, just public knowledge. Nepotism, okay, we'll put that aside. And you know why I got to put that aside? Because Biden and getting his son with the corporation over there and the job he didn't deserve. Boy, color me shocked, Richie. Yes, people of power do this and on higher levels than, just the guy who gets you the job at the Walmart because he happens to be the shift manager. Okay. So the idea is that sure, that happens. But directly into his own pocket constantly is one thing. The fact that he's found guilty of, you know, violating all of the ethical considerations that go with, you know, having a public charity. The idea that, I mean, and I'm not just going with mainstream media news on this, because the mainstream media is complicit in this, in this country. They have done nothing but legitimize this nonsense and actually utilize him as a business model 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter if it's Fox News, MSNBC, or, you know, hyper insane Christian broadcasting. It is irrelevant because they are utilizing him as the reality show du jour, nationally and internationally at this point. And you know this. Everybody knows this if you look at it objectively. I mean, you sit there and you go, the president's a criminal. Look at all the bad things he's doing. By the way, here's his 2020 election campaign commercial, which we're getting paid a lot of money to run. And then back to our commentary, where we're not going to actually present you news, but we're going to give you a couple of talking heads. Here's the Trump supporter who's going to sit there and make irrational arguments. Here's an angry person of ethnic origin other than white who is going to get even more upset about it. And by the way, we can make 5-10 shows out of this at least a week.
Now, you've just defined, you've just defined Fox News, but Trump would say Trump would say, all right, Fox has got my back, Chuck, he might say, but the other networks are almost uniformed in their hatred for Trump. I mean, I look at some of them, ABC, CBS, you mentioned MSNBC, CNN, whereas Fox is basically Trump propaganda 24/7, apart from Tucker Carlson. But you're right, it is. The rest of them seem to be taking the opposite, opposing views. They despise Trump.
Well, but here's the thing, though. All right. In the world wrestling entertainment universe in which we currently live, you can promote the bad guy, you see, as the bad guy. And if everybody's getting paid from the same corporation, which, by the way, our president, our alleged president, whatever you want to call him, is indeed a member of the WWE Hall of Fame.
He is. That's right. So, amazingly.
I'm sorry. Yeah, good.
Brilliant. That's, I'm not interrupting you. I'm saying that's right. That's a little known fact. But being a former WWF fan back in the days of WWF, I remember Trump hosting WrestleMania 4 at Trump's place in Vegas. I remember all of this. You're absolutely right. So can I ask you this then? Do you believe that what we're witnessing is a carefully scripted 24 hours a day serial drama, that none of it, not even a smidgen of it, is real? It is a production for the people. Is that what's going on?
Oh, you've just put it straight, haven't you? Yes, sir. That is exactly what we're looking at. Alleged opposition poorly attempting to defeat the alleged enemy. Yeah. When meanwhile, everybody who benefits and used to benefit from all of this continues to do so. How can you see that? That's the fun part of this, is that quite honestly, the people that go to the rallies, the people that are Trump supporters. And by the way, I'm in a state where I'm surrounded. OK,
he's loved. He's loved, is he, where you are, Chuck? He's loved.
Yeah, absolutely. They love his, you know, his garb. They buy his Sharpies when they go on sale. They buy his red hats. They buy everything. And that's great, because it's just like when they go to the rallies, they show off their merch. Yeah. They go out there and they chant USA, USA. Wait a minute, Richie, if you remember the old WWF days, I remember a guy named Sergeant Slaughter.
Sergeant Slaughter. Up. Yes. Loved him. Yes. Yeah.
that's what we're dealing with. Sergeant Slaughter, except with an orange spray tan, is our president. And quite frankly, he's less intelligent than the guy who played Sergeant Slaughter, but that's okay. That's okay, because again, it's already been prescripted. The victory has been assured. Even those who are objectively looking at this and thinking that America was still not the completely loaded casino that it is, who thought that their vote might actually count, who believes that for some odd reason, just based on faith alone, that the economy has improved and all that other good stuff. You know what? Those people right now are looking at this going, well, they couldn't nail him, could they? So therefore, he must have done nothing wrong. And meanwhile, they didn't, as I'm sorry to have to do this, God, it hurts, to agree with Dr. Fetzer.
There's nothing wrong with agreeing with people from time to time. I bring Jim on because I generally disagree with a lot of his positions. So it makes for decent radio because it never descends into anger or pettiness. I like having him on. But like yourself, I find myself disagreeing with Jim quite a bit.
I don't, by the way.
I know you do, you do. It's important that we all do. Because, as you said, Jim Fess is a very intelligent guy. So that on its own and of itself is a good reason to have him on, even if I don't agree with him or you don't agree with him. But anyway, I cut across you. You were going to say you find another reason to agree with him, which is...
Which is that this is all being staged. Now, the fact is that, like I said, it's a complicity game. You know, and you know what goes into it? This whole debacle in Iowa. Do you think for a second that was not engineered to fail? I mean, seriously, you mean to tell me that, and I mean, they need to call somebody, I don't know, they got to call somebody. I was saying the NFL, but I had a better idea the other day about, you know, coming up with a way to handle things through an app. I don't know. Talk to the people at DoorDash or Grubhub. They might be able to help you out because they can deliver a Whopper wherever you are.
Hey, Chuck, do us a favor. Explain to our listeners what happened in Iowa. Explain the technical side of it. What's the official version of what happened in Iowa? And then tell us what you think happened. This is the Democratic caucus, right?
Yeah, well, the official version in Iowa is still unanswered. As we speak, really, it's like, well, we have a problem with this app, and we're not sure what happened. We thought it was okay, but apparently it's not. Meanwhile, the name of the app is Shadow. The company that produced it is Acronym. Okay, how much more on the nose do you have to be about this? Meanwhile, yeah. Pete Buttigieg was in bed with these people before there was ever the Iowa caucus or it being used or all that. So there's a whole dimension there that's going on. But meanwhile, it's not about Pete Buttigieg, who did get to be the beneficiary of the alleged results after the alleged debacle, you know, where everything failed, including paper, you know,
including paper. So just to be clear, Chuck, people were using the app to cast their vote for their preferred Democratic candidate. Is that right?
Well, no, people were doing this in different rooms, in person, right? This is the point of caucusing, and there's only a certain group of people that can do this during the day. So they're doing it with paper and with their words, their votes. They're reporting to a person who's supposed to take this, enter it into a computer program, and then report it ahead so they can all be collected across the state. So that app was supposed to be the mechanism by which you could report these results. But meanwhile, for some reason, there was all kinds of chicanery going on. I watched some of this stuff happen in real time, and they were like, well, there's supposed to be 134 people voting. I've got 135 votes. There was all kinds of stuff going on. And at the end of the day, none of it is relevant because, first of all, no matter who the Democrats put out front, they are destined to lose.
They're going
to
lose anyway, you think. You think they're gone. It doesn't matter.
And they're kneecapping Bernie Sanders again, which makes me have to agree with Trump and his nonsense and his supporters' nonsense, because unfortunately, the devil tells you the truth once in a while. And they did this to take him out. Sanders is poised to get the support in a place like Iowa, like you wouldn't believe, because young people don't want their futures to go the way that they're witnessing what's happened to their parents. And they're supporting him. I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders is great. I am saying that the will of the people is being subversive, and it's all a game, and it's all designed to make sure that there is a predestined failure candidate put up front once again.
So what we're thinking here is, and I've been suggesting this to my audience for a long, long time in my news roundup segments. I've been suggesting this a long time, that those who really control things, and they are a small group of financiers who pull the strings, in my opinion, I should say in my opinion, that they have created this nonsense. Because we've never seen anything like it before, this right. Donald Trump thing. And I believe that back in the heyday of independent media, which I believe our best years were before I became independent, the best years for the independent media were in the very late 1990s. And all the way through the 2000s, up until Obama. That was the heyday for the independent media because there was very little censorship. Now, Chuck, this is what I believe happened. Because of the brilliance of independent media, like Maria, the godmother of the independent media, and many others, Alex back in the day before he went batshit crazy. I've known Alex for donkey's years, back in the day, doing great work. David, of course, doing great work. Because they weren't censored, I believe that all over the world, people began to see through the bullshit that is elections and democracy. They began to see through it. And I believe that the establishment then, Chuck, had to do something about that. I believe there was panic. Oh my God, they are seeing through it. And that's why they gave us Trump, I believe. Now, I could be talking complete nonsense, but I believe the entire thing, Trump isn't aware of it. He's completely unaware of it, nor are his family. But the whole thing is just a, like we said earlier on, a very, very carefully scripted television production that's put out there to make people think it's all real. And what it's done is many of those who turned away from elections and democracy have now returned to it because they've fallen for it, while the hidden hand does what it does and carries on as normal. Now, a lot of my listeners disagree with that, but that's how I feel about it.
No, I don't disagree with you even an inch, my friend. This is precisely what went on. There's a couple of nuances that you skipped over, but
I'd straight like to into it. Yeah, you join. You fill in those gaps. I'm happy to have you do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They were realizing that the game was rigged, and you're right. That translation period is 2001. It is the post 9/11 reality. Yeah. That we are in now, which, you know, comes with a whole lot of extra surveillance, upgrades in technology, TSA, you name it. So all of that, all right, is really where it started to change. Now, the attempt to calm down the fact that there was a significant portion of the population who realized that they had been marginalized for far too long, well, there was a bit of a bone thrown to them. Look, we're going to give you a representative who might actually represent you. And guess what? His name was Obama. Hope and change, right?
Yes.
He didn't change much. He kind of continued the agendas. Sure, he did a couple of things of interest, but if you were hoping for change, I guess you were left hopeless and begging for change because that was the end of that. But it did calm down that portion of society that, let's just say, is not white. So in the meantime, between the time that Obama was first elected and he left office, there was a backlash brewing and a right-wing anger streak that was brewing. That, you know, I heard over and over again, this man is the Antichrist. He's not going to leave the office when it comes time. He's going to sit there and end America. America's all over with. He's a secret Muslim. All of these things, which are not my opinions and not the opinions of the Richie Allen Show. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But they were the tropes. You know it. I know it. This is what we watched. This is why we had to come into this. I at least I'm speaking for myself, but I bet it had something to do with why you came in. You saw a toxic thing being injected into what was independent media. It was hijacked. It was taken over. It was infiltrated with provocateurs that started leaning that way and were looking for, guess what? The apocalypse to hit, the crash of the dollar. Get ready, preppers. We're going to need our guns. And gun sales did indeed skyrocket under Obama. Whole bunch of prep stuff skyrocketed under Obama. Not saying people shouldn't be prepared. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in gun ownership because guess what? I do. But that doesn't fit with most people's impression of me, but this back to the story. They needed to do something with the angry white aspect of this country, the uneducated, ignorant ones who half understood the conspiracies, who had now been following the likes of David Duke being injected into the alternative media, who had now been following others who wanted to tell them that, you know, Nazism wasn't so bad. You know, that white power is fine, that this is a good thing, that, you know, they've kind of given you a liberal slant on all this stuff. And, you know, that liberal media, it's a for-profit industry, by the way, folks. It's not so liberal. It's all got to do with the almighty dollar. But back to the story again, they had to give him a front man. Doesn't mean the front man is educated, doesn't mean he understands what he's doing, and it doesn't mean that he's not being run by people like the man who I do claim is his brain, although he is allegedly going to be sentenced in a few days, Roger Stone.
Roger Stone, yeah.
Let's not forget him, okay, because take a look at all of what has happened. Does this not look like something that Roger Stone would script?
Yeah, it does indeed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, chapter and verse.
So there you go. And he releases rules on these kind of things. Take a look at him. I'm serious. Stone's rules on this and that. I'm not saying I want to give the guy traffic, but just look it up on the internet. You'll see that what I'm saying makes perfect sense. And so you had to get that, you know, which is still a majority in this country, despite the fact that, yeah, birth rates are falling and that may not last very much longer. But the people that identify themselves as white, which, by the way, I'm not one of them. But, you know, because I know I'm Sicilian and Irish, and guess what? That doesn't mean white. Okay, moving on. I know it looks white, but anyway, moving on. This is not for me. This is not for anybody who wasn't just angry and really feeling like they had been too crazy to be let into the right-wing tent, because they were. A lot of hope and change once again, but repackaged and for a slightly different demographic. And now you have the guy who says, I am battling for you. And lo and behold, QAnon is a thing. Lo and behold, he's talking about half, you know, cocked conspiracy theories and such. But meanwhile, this is the guy who had the opportunity to do nothing, release JFK documents. He's had several opportunities to do things for the 9/11 families to allow them to know information. Nothing. He's got his Justice Department blocking that. Okay, so you want to talk about the truther president? Not this guy.
Yeah, we're going to end U.S. interventionism policies. We're going to do all of that. And, of course, none of it changes. And you begin to wonder when, I mean, I had it out with Jim Fetzer on Tuesday, I think, asking him what will it take for him to understand that it's rigged. And Jim said, and I don't want to misrepresent him now, but my memory is good enough. Jim said that he would choose voting over not voting and civil disobedience every day of the week. He would still go back to the well every 4 years. It doesn't matter how many times. I said to him, so how many more times will you have to be fooled before you understand that the system can't present or produce decency, honesty, justice, dignity, you know, fairness? It won't ever do that. And he was a bit bewildered, really. And it's an age thing, I think, with Jim as well. Not to be ageist, because I'm not. But I think, you know, I think a lot of people under 40 are beginning to understand it. A lot of people, like my parents' age, they know things are terrible. They're bewildered. They're perplexed most of the time. But they still get that polling card in the post and will still go to the local school on voting day and cast their vote. And no, they know in their bones that it's ridiculous, that it's foolish, but they do anyway. And I don't know what to say to people. You know?
Well, and I know what to say to people. Here it is. You know what? It's a fast food culture. It's a fast food politic. And guess what? When you go to McDonald's, you can only order fast food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not going to get something that is organic and healing and wonderful. And yes, I know they've come up with some other nutritional choices and blah, 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 blah. But you know what? They pre-select the menu. You're just picking off the menu. So therefore, where did your choice end? Well, probably around the time that menu was concocted by the individuals who decided to design it. So think about
that. You got no chance. Let me read a couple of tweets before I do. If you haven't checked out Chuck's website before, it's ocelli.com, and you can follow him on Twitter as well. There's only one Chuck Ocelli. I'll tweet out Chuck in a minute. You'll see where he is on Twitter. Follow him there. Check out his program. It's unique. You're listening to him now. Great delivery. Nosy stuff. Open-minded. Fair. Is a fact checker. He's no truther. I don't know if you use that term. I don't use it. I don't like it. He's not. It's a nonsense. It's a catch-all term that the establishment, I think, has put out there. You're somebody who looks at the facts. It's journalism as it used to be. It's not truth. I think that term truther is a nonsense. Anyway, I'll read a couple of tweets. Patricia's been on to say, what's so difficult to understand is that Americans should be the most against Trump and his grifter family, but they're his main supporters, defenders. They still don't understand that he doesn't give a shit about them, says Patricia there. Laurie Hatfield, she's in West Virginia. Laurie says, it's a big club and we aren't in it. George Carlin, absolutely spot on. Chris tweets, re-Trump, how does the Christian right neo-Nazi appeal fit with the total support for Israel? That's a very good question. And we've touched on that before. That's one, I mean, we can briefly touch on that. Isn't it funny that you've seen, even in this country, you've seen goons, thugs like Tommy Robinson, you know, the likes of which would have been previously, you know, in previous incarnations, these guys would have blamed Jewish people for absolutely everything. I don't know whether it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend, you know, because a lot of these guys on the right, they bash Muslims on a daily basis. They race bait all the time. It's what they do, race baiting. And I suppose it's convenient for them to, I don't know, to profess some sort of support for Israel. That's a very good point by Chris there. How does that work? You know, this you know, these neo-Nazis that follow Trump and now express them support for Israel? Or how do they accept Trump's support for Israel? What do you say to that?
Yeah, that is one of those head-scratchers. it was just, Chris, was it? That definitely is a head-scratcher, Chris, and I'll tell you why it's even more of a head-scratcher than you just pointed out. You know, the guy who was going to battle Big Pharma turned around, and what did he do in his first executive order? Take the handcuffs off of Big Pharma.
Yeah.
You know, what does the guy do when he says, I'm going to fight for you? The people at his rallies are not the rich, not the elite, no matter how many times he tells them, oh, actually, you're the elite. He is in a position of telling those people that. Meanwhile, gives a tax cut to the upper 1%, mostly, you know.
Yeah.
Big headline news today, you know, Jeff Bezos might actually have to pay some taxes, but not really. Amazon gets away with it. He doesn't like them because, you know, they don't kiss his backside constantly, but hey, you know, there's a lot of reasons to sit there. Zionism used to be one of these things that these current Trumpers screamed about constantly.
Yeah.
Screamed about continuously. I mean, yes, they were all about the clash of civilizations and, you know, they don't like the brown Muslim people either. But they used to scream about Zionism, which on one level, there's a point. On another level, it becomes a little bit cartoonish when some of these guys are screaming and trying to apply that Israel is running every single thing on the planet.
Yeah.
So there is a sanity level in there somewhere, but these people sit there and just, oh, it's okay. Trump is totally on the side of Israel. That's fine. Now, why does that work? I think because of the evangelist and also the constant Christian thing that nobody wants to talk about, because then they scream at you that you're bashing Christians. And it is that you are encouraged as a Christian, as a faithful churchgoer, to understand that to speak against Israel is to speak against God. These words come out of the mouths of people on the pulpits and on the TV, you know, mega churches and everything else constantly. Okay, John Hagee is a great example of this. You know, you want to look at a televangelist guy, you can find him online. I kid you not. Always about, you must support Israel. So there is that runs through that vein. But there's the other thing, and it's called cognitive dissonance. You know what? They just ignore the things that are obvious don't like. There because they're getting something else they want.
I see an agenda. I've seen it for years. It's very successful. And it's successful because, I suppose, because it is real, that groups of people are being conditioned, and they are being conditioned through terrible things being done to them. I'm not putting this very well, but groups of people all over the world, different ethnic groups of people, all at the same time begin to feel that they are being uniquely targeted, that they are being marginalised, and that they are being oppressed. And that's because they are. Like every human being on planet Earth is being oppressed and is being put down by this system that we talk about. We give it different names. But it's correct. Been so brilliant. It's been so wonderfully malevolent. It's been so incredibly well thought out that individual groups of people feel that they're getting it worse than the guy across the road. We're getting it worse than the Mexicans. The Mexicans think they're getting it worse than the blacks. The blacks think they're getting it worse than the Jews. And rather than us all looking and together and saying, well, what's going on here? Why is life so bloody hard? We just race bait. It's easy. So we look, because there is a lot of truth in, I see it here in the UK, and I had a great professor of culture on the programme from Kent University called Frank Furedi. And he said, there is, you can see it in Western Europe, you can see how the indigenous culture is being marginalised and minority cultures are being given a bit of a leg up. Now, that's not the fault of the minority culture, of course. It's not their bloody fault. Don't venture spleen on them, because they're getting it hard enough anyway. Many of them have come from Syria, from Lebanon, from Yemen, from Libya, from Iraq, from Afghanistan, because our imperial forces have destroyed their lives. So, yeah, crazy merry-go-round.
This is a tactical consideration. It's here's what the problem is. When everybody talks about that, these are tactics to do what? The one thing I guarantee you're going to agree with what I'm about to say is to keep us fighting with each other so that we not only don't recognize our oppressors, but we don't recognize their agents either.
100%. That's the best I've ever heard it summed up. It's as simple as that. And it's identity politics was born. Well, it wasn't born. It didn't manifest itself naturally. Identity politics was given to us. It's amazing. And we're dividing ourselves more and more and more and more into more ridiculous identity groups, aren't we? It used to be just colour and sexual orientation and religious identity groups, didn't it, Chuck? Now it's, you know, non-binary shit and all this nonsense. We're pigeonholing ourselves more. And all we're doing is separating, increasingly separating from each other. Every one of us is born with a brain, with a heart, with a pair of lungs, with kidneys. We're all the same, and we're all being oppressed by the same jackboot. And yet, rather than come together and deal with it, we kill one another because, well, you're getting more than I am. You're getting more than me. You're being, look, I'm being marginalised. It's a race to the bottom. Who's the biggest victim? And it's, I don't know how you even begin to try and get people to understand that.
Yeah, that is the toughest thing, is that, you know, if we stopped wasting the energy that we are putting into battling with one another and fighting over the crumbs that, you know, aren't even always real, by the way.
Yeah.
Sometimes they are illusionary crumbs and they are imaginary. You know, again, the fact that people want to keep saying, well, the economy is doing so well. I don't know anybody it's doing well. I got to be honest with you. I don't know anybody it's doing well for. Nothing has changed, really. There's been this incremental rise since the, you know, financial collapse in 2008, which has been the slowest of slow motion recoveries, still going on, but no great gains. Nobody I know has great jobs. Oh, there's less unemployment. And yeah, some people are driving Ubers. They don't count as unemployed, you know? this is not a way to live. And this is by design, because again, if you can keep us all at odds with each other and battling over which savior you want to, you know, get yourself behind, and well, I think Biden will be the guy, and oh, please. And Trump's going to save us because he cares. Oh, man, I'm going to choke.
He's draining the swamp, which is an amazing thing. Slogans are very important as well for this agenda to work. Slogans. And people are so unaware that they're being battered on a daily basis with sloganeering. You know, you've touched on it. You know, drain the swamp, you know. It's a hoax, fake news, and people just swallow it all, and then they regurgitate it and they believe it. It's crazy. We've got about 2 minutes left today with Chuck. If you haven't checked out Chuck's radio program, I recommend it highly. Go to Acelli, OCHELLI.com. Chuck Acelli, Irish Sicilian, doesn't get any more dangerous than that. I wouldn't mess with him, and I wouldn't mess with him. But no, it's good to have you back on the show. Just a couple of quick fire kind of questions. Sure. What about Iran 2020? We had, obviously, the unlawful extrajudicial murder of Qasem Soleimani. There was an Iranian response of sorts. You had the which was mild compared to what it might have been. Maybe there's been lies told about that as well. We had the Ukrainian airline shot down, which is a terrible thing. Things seem to have settled down a little bit, although people that we admire, I think you and I admire, are still convinced that the agenda is for a full-scale conflict with Iran soon. How do you see that in 2020?
Yeah, it's simply not time yet. They don't need it to stoke interest in sticking behind the great leader, which they, you know, utilized before. You ever notice when it's questionable as to whether the great leader is going to be reselected, you get yourself some sort of conflict, because who wants to change horses halfway through? Wait a minute. Didn't George Bush say something like that? Anyway,
he did.
No, there's that. It's just simply not time yet for Iran. Now, I would look for it around September, to be honest with you. And then again, they may keep it in their back pocket because it may not be necessary this year, considering all of the other nonsense that we've engaged in, like the impeachment, which did nothing but empower the grand leader here, the grand orange, if you will. So, you know, the grand poobah, you know, on the Flintstones cartoons, Richie, the grand poobah at the Buffalo Lodge, right? There he was doing his thing. And does he need Iran to get through? I don't think so. And let's call Soleimani's murder what it is. It was an assassination. is that legal under international law? No, but who's paying attention to that?
Who's
anymore?
Paying attention anyway? Final question for today, Chuck. Thanks for coming back on. Coronavirus. Are you worried about it?
No. And that's the short answer. And why? Because, see, I remember the swine flu and the avian flu and SARS, and Just for the record, more people have died from the common flu this year already than have died from this thing, which That's now right. they're going to have international conventions about. Now, that having been said, it doesn't mean that it might not be useful as a political weapon, because what we have learned in the past few years, especially, and what is so obvious, but you and I knew a long time ago, Richie, is that almost anything that can be put into the public's mind can be weaponized, whether it's conspiracy theory, fear of an outbreak, doesn't matter. Remember Ebola. Remember Zika. Remember, oh, dear God, what else?
SARS, swine flu. You said swine flu. Yeah. And they amounted to nothing.
Don't forget MERS, right? MERS, Middle East, really, respiratory syndrome. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. And they all amounted to nothing more than nonsense. Mate, thanks for coming back on today. Come back again in a few weeks, Chuck, and shoot the breeze with us. Love having you on. Genuinely, mate, you know that. And thanks for making your program. Listen to it regularly. Ocelli.com, O-C-H-E-L-L-I.com. Find Chuck on Twitter as well. Very impressive man. I've not mentioned that Chuck is legally blind. Because there's no need to mention it. It's got nothing to do with how he does. But I'm impressed that he's able to do what he does with that impairment. I think it's amazing. I'm not patronising you. I think you're I think you're a big bollocks of a gammon like me at the best of times as well. But I think it's amazing what you do. And I'm glad to have you on this programme. You're welcome back anytime, Chuck.
Listen, thank you. I will take you up on that anytime. And remember this, if a blind man can see it, what's your excuse? So there you go, Richie. Have a good one.
Not going to follow that up. Cheers, Chuck. Speak soon, mate. Bye for now. Chuck Ocelli, ocelli.com, O-C-H-E-L-L-I.com. Irish Sicilian legend, live from New York City on today's Richie Allen radio show. Right, I'm going to do this, then take a tune, and then I will open the phone thing. I'll just press a button to open the phone thing, the gadget, and Skype as well. You can Skype the program. It's Chat with Richie. You might want to, you might not want to. I don't care. I've got plenty to talk about anyway, he says, rather childishly. No, I do. I want you to talk to me. Right, okay, quick break, back in a minute.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, now, I haven't given you the contact details in quite a few minutes, so I'll give you the contact details in a second there. It is Chat with Richie on Skype. That couldn't be simpler. Chat with Richie on Skype. But, if you want to phone the program, it is 0161-818-2018. That's 0161-818-2018. And if you're calling from outside the country, of course, it's plus 44-161-818-2018, right? And I'm going to do headlines now, because I've got to do headlines. After headlines, we'll have a very quick tune, and then I'll be taking your calls right up till 7 o'clock. If you want to talk to me, that is, and I hope you do. It's the Richie Allen Radio Show, live for Thursday, February 6th, 2020. It's over to Ollie Barrett at FSN.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. German Chancellor Angela Merkel says the election of a liberal leader in the east of the country with the support of the far-right AfD should be reversed. US President Donald Trump can now continue his campaign for re-election after he was cleared of impeachment charges. Hollywood actor Kirk Douglas has died at the age of 103, and Belgium's Prime Minister Sophie Wilmès has made her first official visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Those are your headlines on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Looking forward to hearing from you in a minute. Before we do that,
the Richie Allen Show relies on your support.
Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Okay, then I'll open Skype and I will open the phone line as well after we hear this from The Who, song called The Seeker, on your Richie Allen radio show. Live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, lots of other places as well. Right, The Who, The Seeker on the Richie Allen radio show. Lots of people want to get through, so let's jump straight into Paul. Long-time listener to the programme is Paul. And Paul wanted to get on last time when we did one of these. I'm delighted that he's made it this time. How you doing, Paul?
Oh, hi, mate. How are you? It's a lovely talk to you. I've been listening to you a couple of years now.
You have, mate, yeah. And you've been corresponding with me on Twitter. I always like you. Yeah, I love that. And you've supported the programme as well, to your absolute credit. So it's lovely to chat with you, my friend. You started off, Paul, so you can talk about whatever you want, mate.
Thank you. Well, there's so many things I'd love to talk about, but I've got to pick one, right? So I'm gonna go with this one, which feels like the most pressing one at the moment. You had like somebody on your show, about in the last year or so, who got into real trouble. She got sectioned for like talking about her anxieties about, I think it was 5G. Am I right?
You're absolutely bang on. There's an amazing the girl's name is Suzanne. And yeah. She got in touch with me through Facebook to say, I'm in a psychological assessment unit. I'm basically in a mental hospital. And I was sent there because I got into an argument over email with my doctor, because my doctor was a bit huffy when I wanted to talk about 5G. That's right. Amazing. It was an amazing thing. Suzanne was her name.
And I want to throw a story in here that in some ways has a kind of relationship to that in its own strange way. And it's this, because I've become, I call myself Paul Paranoid as a joke, because like people always sort of said that I was like thought too much and I took things too seriously and I was paranoid. And I kind of thought, well, look, if people are going to call me that or say that, I'm going to take it further, like Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious, you know. And I was in a band and stuff that became my thing, it became my moniker, you know. And I thought it was fun. I thought I empowered myself by doing it. But the story I'm about to tell you is gonna kind of like make me regret. I've come to regret it a little bit for this reason. I've had a really rough sort of 10 years up to now. For 7 of those 10 years, I looked after my mother, who had multiple sclerosis and bipolar disorder. And I looked after her for that. Now, most of that, the first half wasn't too bad. Like, it was difficult and it was trying. But the last half was dreadful, absolutely dreadful. And full-time care is something that's going to be happening more and more in society. And people don't realize the cost on people's health, mental health, and financial cost of it, and stuff like that. And my mother's condition was so complicated. Like, there were so many issues because she had more than one thing wrong with her. There were so many. I ended up really being her personal nurse. And in the end, I didn't think she could go into care because it would have been euthanasia. You follow me?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I know what you're saying there. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew that you couldn't pay anyone enough to be as on, like, on case as I was.
To look after her like you would, and that if she went there, she would have just given up.
I had to be on top of so much stuff that I knew that even, like, it got to the point where even though my family were quite crap, to be honest, and weren't any help at all, I wouldn't even have left her in the care of, say, my brother or sister for more than a few hours if they'd been prepared to provide that, because I had to look after, you know, it was a big commitment. So I went through all of that and it kicked the crap out of me, as you can imagine. And I'm only just getting it together now. I think she died. Well, God, I probably lost track of the time now. She died in 2013 and I'm only just really, it's that 7 years ago. So I'm only just starting to feel like I'm getting my strength back now. But here's the thing. I had a very good psychotherapist, right, who helped me through a lot of stuff to do with my family that I didn't understand. And my psychotherapist eventually said to me, I think you need to look into narcissistic abuse, because I think your family, you're narcissistic. I think your father's a narcissist. I think you've been basically psychologically bullied by a narcissist. And so I started looking into it, and it was shocking, because as I started to, I did it through YouTube, and on YouTube, there's a lot of personal confetti, that sort of, what's the word for this? Testimonies by survivors, but obviously those aren't, you know, medically, clinically, like necessarily viable, but they're certainly informative.
Explain it to us, Paul. Explain it. What does it mean? What does, because I've read this in the press in recent years as well. It's being, I'm not going to say it's become fashionable, because that might make you think that I'm being, critical of it. It's a bit trendy, right? But I don't want to be critical of it. What does it mean? What sort of characteristics would a narcissistic parent have? What does it mean exactly? And how does that impact on their children?
Right. Great question. But basically, a narcissist is, I must try and do this, compress this as much as I can. A narcissist, right, is pathologically self-involved, all right? And to the point where everything is about the way they see themselves, okay? So whether or not you have a good relationship on a particular day with your narcissistic parent is entirely down to the mood they're in and whether or not they are getting the supply, the feed they need from the situation.
Yeah.
And they're basically a pathologically spoiled child in an adult's body. That's the short version, right? There's a lot more to it. But just like a spoiled child will learn to say, do things like set one parent against another to get what they want, or to set friends against each other so they get to sort of get the role they want. You know, like you've got a parent doing that to you. And what they tend to do is they tend to select one member of the family, one of the children, as their target, and they select another child as what's called the golden child. And the golden child can do no wrong, and the target carries all of the frailties of the entire family, and specifically of the parent. So it's and it sounds like a lot of, one of the things, the resistances you get, you try and explain it to people who haven't experienced it, and they just go, well, you just had a shit dad, or you just had a selfish parent. It's much worse than that. It's pathological. You know, we hear about the phrase pathological liar, for example, right? Most, in my opinion at the moment, I mean, I'm not educated in this, but I've done a lot of groundwork and a lot of experience of it, if my psychotherapist was correct. Basically, I would suspect that all pathological liars are actually narcissists, and the pathology is the key, that pathological liar, pathological narcissist, child abusers, I would suggest, are pathological narcissists. I could be wrong, but I would very much suspect that Jimmy Savile, for example, absolutely classic narcissist, right? And in fact, Jimmy Savile is a really good example, because you know the way that while he was alive, nobody could do no wrong, he never got called out, he never got proved to be what he was, all of that. Well, basically, that's classic narcissism. They always take positions in society, like teachers, politicians, doctors, stuff like that, and they're always like a big, like big players in society. They're always like admired, they're always like pillars of society, or in some regard. And if they're not a pillar, they're it'll be something else. They'll be like priests, they're the Cub Scout leader. There's always something. They've always ensured that their political positioning is safe. They're very big on propriety. They're very big on their position in society. And then the poor target is this failure. And no wonder they're a failure. They're a complete nervous wreck, you know? The target is always suffers from symptoms. Now, this is where I get back to my main part of my story. And please push me back if I need to explain anything more about that. But most targets of narcissistic parents develop a condition called complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which is similar to the post-traumatic stress disorder we all know about, like that soldiers can get and people that are in very high stressful situations can get, like firemen and stuff like that. But the complex part is that it takes a long time. It's through sustained, slow drip, drip, drip abuse, as opposed to, and I might be getting my terminology wrong here, but I'm on the right track. It's in this area. Complex post-traumatic stress disorder is when you have had a long, gentle, sustained abuse, but it's so severe, so chronic, that it still results in a condition that's as damaging as full-blown post-traumatic stress.
And how does that manifest itself in the child that's been subjected to parenting from a narcissist? What does it mean? How does it show up?
It will show up in different ways at different stages in your life. In the child will be very anxious. The child will never develop proper social cues and stuff like that. So that would be cause lots of problems at schools. They'll normally be bullied at school. There'll be tells like that. As an adult, it will manifest in usually a condition like chronic fatigue or even ME type symptoms like chronic fatigue and pain. There can be something like migraines. There will be a functionality issue. They'll have enormous problem with something called there's a great phrase for this about the ability to, like, most of us have a default setting for like shopping listing tasks we need to do. Executive function goes out the window. Most of us have a default way of shopping listing our jobs, whether it's washing up, whether it's putting our shoes on and tying our laces. In the person with the CPTSD, that gets really, it breaks down and you have enormous difficulty just doing ordinary tasks. So you can like just have to, I'm a lot better than I was, but I have to just stop doing stuff sometimes because I'm having to overcompensate for the CPTSD so badly.
It's like task it becomes like task saturation then, Paul. I had planned on getting through lots of calls. I'm going to stay with you.
Sorry.
No, hey, listen, don't apologize to me. This is very interesting. So we'll stay with this for a few minutes. So we're talking about something that I've heard described as acute narcissistic personality disorder and in parents.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, and I've read in the past that this is very common. And you've described it as happening to you. And the way you've described it is very similar to the testimonies that I've read. And I've not read very much into this, but I read the newspapers every day of the week and I have read about this before. And you talk there about a parent playing siblings off against one another. You describe that very well. The golden child and the child that becomes, I suppose, almost the symbol of all the difficulties around the family, the emotional problems.
Scapegoat.
The scapegoat, well said. The scapegoat, the symbolic scapegoat. And the impact then that it then has on children. Now, I know callers are trying to get through. Look, if I've got to go over 7 o'clock, I'll go over 7 o'clock. I want to stay with Paul for a minute because I think this is important. What I'm very interested in here is does anybody have any idea? Listen, I believe your experiences were absolutely real. I know friends that I grew up with who had parents who behaved the way you described your own experience. So I believe this is real. What I'm interested in is when did this begin to show up? Did it begin to show up in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, sexual revolution thereafter? Because that is interesting. Because I'm of the belief, I mean, you jokingly refer to yourself as Paul Paranoid because your mates said that you are a bit paranoid, you know, conspiracy theories and stuff. But I believe that everything ultimately is an agenda. And it comes from somewhere. It doesn't just happen that parents become develop acute narcissistic personality disorder, which has a huge impact on their children. It must have come from somewhere. Have you gotten as far as that yet, Paul, in terms of trying to figure it out?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about this in the community. I mean, I've had a break from the survivors community for a couple of years because I got to a point where I just wanted to start living and not be thinking about this. But before I did take a break, Oh, by the way, I've got a channel if anybody wants to check it out. It's Mr. WTF on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out. But there are much better channels than mine out there. And one of the things that came up on this channel was on one of the channels I follow was Ollie Matthews' channel, The Narcissistic Resistance. He did a lot of talking about how he thought it was due to the baby boomer thing, like after the war. And I found that really interesting that like the war had so many impacts and effects. Sorry, still there?
I am enraptured, mate. I'm listening with both ears wide open.
You. It's like my phone just buzzed at me. And for a horrible minute, I thought I'd lost you. Basically, Ollie talked about this a lot, and he said that he thought that the Second World War, the fallout from the Second World War, was it created the baby boomers, and the baby boomers were this narcissistic generation. Obviously, that's very, you know, that's a little bit wide, but that the tendency for these children, because they were spoiled and indulged, and the way you create a narcissist is you have, it takes very specific conditions. They might have to be a little bit of a predisposition to it, but basically one parent overindulges the child and one parent is cold to the child. That creates the conditions that create a pathological narcissist. And apparently, it's just a theory, but they feel that that's what happened to a whole generation after the Second World War. And then that generation raised, tell me if I'm wrong, Generation X. Am I right?
Yes.
And then
Generation.
I think Generation X were the first generation to more commonly than before be suffering from to be suffering from narcissistic abuse. And I find it very interesting that Generation X was the punk generation, because there's something very narcissistic survivor about punk. You know what I mean? Like punk is a real sort of like, kind of like a real sort of like middle finger to society sort of reaction. And I just find that interesting, but it might be a coincidence, but something in that. So that's my answer to that. I think the Second World War, and there's all this stuff in the conspiracy universe, for want of a better word, about the issues to do with war and how war is used to traumatize society and traumatize. And this could be generational vandalism, you know?
Yeah,
that's kind of where I feel about it.
Yeah, that answers the earlier question. Well, it answers the question about when did it begin and possibly why did it happen? You know,
it has existed before. Sorry, go on.
It does. I mean, I've studied Greek mythology. Now that sounds very pretentious and grand. When I say I've studied Greek mythology, I think I've had about as much exposure to Greek mythology as most people. But we all know about Narcissus. We got the term narcissism from Narcissus, who fell in love with his own reflection and all of that. Maybe it's been around forever, but maybe something happened.
Oh God, yes, but it got worse. That's my point. Dickens writes about it all the time. It's always been part of humans, and even the Luciferian sort of mindset is a narcissistic one. So there's all sorts of stuff going on. Like, if you like, Lucifer, if the devil, Lucifer, Satan is a real being, he's like a narcissistic being. That's if you buy that. But you know, it's all anything that's empowering.
I've just had a message from Jean Anne, who says this has become, this is no criticism of you, she's saying it's become a bit of a catch-all, describing most everyone as selfish and unkind. No, she says it's become a bit of a catch-all, describing those who are selfish and unkind as narcissists. So if we come across people behaving badly or being selfish, we lump them in with narcissism. I think she's right to say that, because I do it a lot, because I look at what social media, the effect it's having on people, Paul, in the last 10 years, and I see it, you know, moving people towards a place where people are more certain and sure of their own worth and their own importance, but more importantly, more sure of them being right and being righteous. And I think there's a little bit of narcissism there, I think, but maybe I say it too often.
I'd like to respond, mate, if I'm not Jean Anne, I'm not sure whether she's kind of like, I'm not sure which way she's cutting that, because I think she might be saying that it's being used to to accuse someone of being a narcissist, right, it's being used too lightly. People are doing that during the homework.
Yes, that's what she's saying, like, basically, you know.
I think she's, I'm not sure that she's, and I'm not taking it personally, but I'm not sure she's necessarily questioning my testimony. But I think, and she might be, but I think what she's saying is like, it's too, it's, and this is one of the things that I've noticed has happened anyway in this kind of enemy state that we live in, is that as soon as there's an opportunity for people to free themselves from something and identify, there's an immediate response where the thing, like, for example, the classic one is the expression conspiracy theory is now used to dismiss any kind of intelligent reasoning about whatever it is you want to talk about. So whether or not you believe we went to the moon or not, right, whether or not we believe that or not, you can't discuss it, because as soon as you discuss it, they come out with, oh, well, that's a conspiracy theory, and they wash it down, they get rid of it, they dilute it immediately. There's no conversation. I don't know if we went to the moon or not, but I doubt it. I doubt it. And I think I'd like to have a conversation about it, but I can't now, because every time you talk to ordinary people, in inverted commas, about anything, it gets completely washed down the toilet.
You get labelled as a tinfoil hat. No, I think I've understood Jean-Anne perfectly. She's not in any way questioning what you've described, because what you've described in your own mother and what I've read, I believe it to be a serious thing.
Sorry, it's my father, bless you. It's my father.
Your father, right? It was your dad. Yeah. I think what she's saying is now, the word itself now, these days...
Yeah, it's been depowered. Yeah.
...has been depowered, because if somebody behaves in a selfish way, they will be, I will declare them to be narcissistic myself, and maybe I shouldn't,
fair.
Do that,
That's fair. To say you're narcissistic is actually completely legitimate. Like, we're all... I can be narcissistic. We can all be narcissistic. It's being a pathological narcissist. It's having, as you put it, you can put a Q on it, by the way, but having NPD, narcissistic personality disorder. It's when it's a personality disorder.
Yeah.
That's when you are a narcissist.
And Paul, you think your own experience with your father and then the community that you're involved in, and you can plug the channel again in a minute, and I'll plug it on Twitter so people can find you. No, it's good. It's very good, this. That's why I love the phone-ins. You see, I came on today thinking, right, I'll get loads of calls, which I have. And to those who are trying to get through, I'm sorry. I will do another phone-in show next week.
I feel bad too.
No, you shouldn't feel bad, because this is important. What we'll do is next week, I'll do another phone-in next week. I'll do it for longer, and we'll get loads of calls. No, today I planned, I'll take calls and I'll try and get people to stick to 2 minutes, to have a good rant for 2 minutes. That was my plan. But the best laid plans of mice and men, you're on, and this is very important. And you got to go with stuff. And there's been a number of comments on Twitter from people saying, stay with this, Richie, because it's very important. Sure. Now, I was coming to the point, you've made a point earlier on, a very Irish thing to say, I was coming to the point that you made a point. You made a point earlier about world leaders, politicians, captains of industry. And you think that there might be a common thing, there might be a common theme with those in power, and the narcissistic personality disorder, the serious pathology, the pathological condition, you think it might be common among those who basically rule us.
I'm afraid so. Yeah, I think it's almost impossible to become a successful politician or a member or pillar of society without having some, without being highly narcissistic or having full blown NPD.
That's profound, that, isn't it? I mean, so the question begs to be asked then: is there an emphasis on taking those people into politics? In other words, are there people looking out for people with NPD, narcissistic personality disorder? Are there people grooming them to get them involved in public life?
That's a really, really fascinating question. And I possibly, but you wouldn't have to, because the sort of people that have this condition will push forward anyway. You don't have to seek them out. They're gonna roll right up. You can't stop them. The key characteristic of NPD is lack of empathy for other people. And that lack of empathy is what enables you to succeed in this society, because we live in a sort of predominantly skews towards narcissism as far as success is concerned, not as far as community is concerned. Community is a completely different issue altogether. Like, I noticed that people in real life are generally kind and thoughtful and stuff like that, like mindful, you know, humble even, right?
Yeah.
But the people that succeed, the people that we notice, and it's not always true, but the people that we notice, that they tend to be these very, I hate to say it, but selfish, self-absorbed, and lacking in empathy, because it's not always true, but it's commonly true.
I've read somewhere before that people with acute narcissistic personality disorder tend to have great affection and fondness for animals, particularly small animals, and can become very emotionally distraught at the thought or the notion of some harm coming to a small animal. But they're pretty cold and indifferent to, you know, the suffering of others. I mean, you and is that true? Is there something in that?
Well, that's a really interesting one. The way I look at it is like this. Basically, you see, what I said to you at the start about the way they see themselves is key. Everything's about the way they see. Now, we're all guilty of that to a lesser or greater degree. But with a narcissist, it's almost an OCD obsession, right? Yeah. So if they get to see themselves as kind and thoughtful with an animal is a lot less complex than, say, a child or a real person. So it's all about that. And don't forget as well, the narcissist will be vile to their target, right? But they can be very kind to everybody else. The target of the narcissist is like the painting of Dorian Gray in the attic.
Say that again. It's like the painting.
The narcissist's scapegoat, their target, is like the painting that ages in Dorian Gray.
Oh, Dorian Gray, of course. Yeah, the famous story. Yeah.
It's like the dirty secret of the narcissist. Is however wonderful they are, however successful they are in society, somewhere, and of course it's in child abuse as well, somewhere there's somebody carrying all their ills, all their frailties.
They have to be terrific actors and actresses, don't they? I mean, to survive, you know, without being exposed, or do they not?
That's the interesting part. That's the most interesting part. They're not lying. They believe it. They think reality is something they construct.
Right.
If you can grasp that, you understand the pathology.
Yeah. Baby boomers were thinking. Let me just remind, Paul is the first and only caller so far. Which is, don't apologise again, it's very good. And Paul has told us about growing up in a family where his dad, Paul, believes. And Paul came to understand this through therapy. Paul looked after his mum for many years while his mum was infirm and didn't send her into a home. And you told us that story in a very lovely way. There's obviously no narcissism there, my friend. It was obviously something that you felt a duty to do. And I want to remind our listeners what you said. Paul looked after his mum. It was a very difficult time for him. Over the years that he cared for. His mum passed away back in 2013. He told us at the outset of the chat that he's not had the best of times since then. And no shame in it whatsoever. I did it myself and it was very beneficial to me. Paul went and sought therapy as a means to helping him along. And it was in therapy that he first heard about narcissistic personality disorder and began to understand the behaviour of his dad towards him in his childhood. And that's where we got into this, and I think it's hugely important. Yeah. And Paul began to talk then about, you know, recognising this trait. Jean Anne made a good point that it is very serious. Maybe it's been weakened or watered down somewhat because of Egypt's like me, because I'll accuse people of it. No, I will. I mean, I'll accuse people on social media of it because they don't want to hear opposing viewpoints. And I will say narcissism. And maybe it's not serious narcissism. Maybe it's not at all.
They're narcissistic.
Narcissistic, but they're not suffering from acute narcissistic personality disorder, which is very serious and very destructive. And you were just saying there, they don't even have to hide this. Because I said they've got to be good actors or actresses. You're like, well, they don't, Richie. You know, they just carry on. But nobody notices or raises the alarm poll that the target child, as you've described yourself, is getting it in terms of passive-aggressive treatment, in terms of not being favoured from your dad. Why does nobody in the extended family not notice this?
Because you're a pain in the arse. Everything about the target is a complete pain in the arse. They complain, they become hysterical, they're anxious, they exhaust everybody, they constantly complain, they're upset all the time. You become a massive pain in the arse.
Okay, hold that thought. Jean Ann says, really enjoying this, very thoughtful, as Paul says, Jean Ann. You got the Crowley approval there from the West of Ireland. So
that means a lot to
so
me.
That's good. The Crowley approval.
Time,
the Crowley approval.
I know who Jean Ann is. Yeah.
Top woman. Now she's asked a brilliant question. I didn't think of this. Does Paul think that the root of narcissism is actually self-loathing? That's a great question. The very root of it.
I have that is very much in the uppermost minds of the people doing psychotherapy. Yeah, the therapists that are in the survivors community that talk to about how it works, they say that they're miserable, and that absolutely makes sense to me from my experience with my dad. Because I want to make something really clear: I love my dad. I'm very, very angry with him, but I don't hate him.
Well, that was my next question, Paul. Sorry, my listeners will kill me now for interrupting you there because you're saying you don't hate. No, but I've got to ask. Because we will eventually run out of time. I've got to ask, even though we can stay on all night if we need to. Is he alive and how do you get on with him?
No, we'd need a whole another hour. All I can tell you is I had to cut him off because when my mum died, they all acted even worse. Right. And that was the end. That was the end. I just couldn't take him anymore.
Okay, mate, fair enough.
I'm very blessed with some very, very good friends who have been like kind of all but in name brothers to me, who have shown me one friend of mine put it like this, a guy who's had a very tough life and has survived some very difficult things. He said to me, for God's sake, release yourself and him from this because you two can't do this to each other. It's not, he may have wronged you, but that's irrelevant because it's not about that. You're both in a toxic situation. That's how he put it. And I think it was very wise advice. And that's a whole nother conversation for the day, though.
It's interesting. It's interesting just to stay with this just for a minute. It's interesting that he said that to you, the therapist, because I've met some therapists and I did have therapy. And confrontation was a big thing. Like, I was physically, not mentally, although I suppose it goes hand in hand.
I was going to say it.
But it does, when you're a child, yeah. But, yeah, of course it does. And ultimately, when I was, you know, ready to, I confronted the man responsible for the abuse and had my say. And a little bit more besides my say, but we won't get into that. And that was important. But in your situation, it hasn't occurred to you or to your therapist that you could confront him and say, Dad, listen, this is what your behaviour did to me.
They can't hear you. They can't hear what you've got to say.
It won't matter.
It's like the Jimmy Savile thing. Like, and whenever anybody, I know that's quite a horrible thing to not compare my dad to Jimmy Savile because that's outrageous, but the principle of narcissism is that they control everything. It's not about the facts, you know. It's about how it looks,
right?
And they control your the reason the golden child thing works. And by the way, there is one component of this I must slip in for the end of the show. So do make sure. Give me a red flag when I've got to throw it in because I was going somewhere and I can do it in 2 minutes. But just briefly, the reason the golden child narcissistic bond is so important is because the golden child will always back up the narcissist. No matter what happens, that relationship is absolutely sacrosanct, right? So the goal, so no matter who, no matter what occurs, there'll always be one person in the world back up the narcissist 100%. And that's if everything goes wrong.
The golden child is as much a victim in this scenario as...
Yes, they are. In fact, there's a very good channel, which I heartily recommend, called Escape from Narcissism, which was by a woman who was a golden child and woke up to it. And she, that's a terrific... And she mentored me, actually, when I was doing my channel. An absolutely fantastic woman called Rachel. And that would be a much better channel to watch than mine. And she did about 3 years constant diarying of her recovery from being a golden child, which is absolutely essential. And I recommend it thoroughly to everybody listening to this, because she was I learned so much from her, you know what I mean? Because she had a real crisis of emerging. And she didn't have to. She didn't have to either, but she kind of woke up to being a golden child, and then she had to unpick herself from that position, not even from the position of being, you know what I mean? And I don't even know how she did it.
Well, it's very traumatic for a child, because the child who's treated well will be acutely aware of what's happening to the target child. That has a profound impact on the child.
It suits them, you see.
Well, I've said this before, when I was younger, it's a different thing, but when I was younger and I was getting beaten very badly, my siblings who weren't beaten very badly, they suffered terribly. It's a terrible thing to see that. My extended family, my aunts, this is not about me, by the way, I'm just reinforcing your point.
They
suffer terribly.
I'm sharing this. It's extraordinary what you're saying. I mean, it sounds terrible, absolutely horrific.
We deal with it and we move on and we leave it behind, having dealt with it. But yeah, I'm more aware these days of the impact it had on them. I mean, I remember speaking to an aunt of mine who was only a year older than me, because my grandfather's first wife died and he remarried about the same time as my mother married. And he had children late in life. So two of my aunts are very close in age to me. And they tell me about the horrors of witnessing me getting hammered on occasions. And it was terrible for them as children watching that and not being able to do anything about it. And the golden child, of course, getting the praise and the affection, on some level understands that it's fake, that it's not real, and implicitly feels the pain of the target child. There's no doubt about that. It's horrendous. Can I ask you this? The support groups, the Facebook groups, the YouTube channels, I'm fascinated by all of this. How common do you and your peers and your fellow survivors of this, how common do you think this is in families in the UK? And it's a stupid question, because you're only going to make a guess, but how much of this you running into?
I know how common it is. It's 1 in 100.
1 in 100, is it?
Yeah, it's 1 in 100.
That's a lot.
That's what I've heard from in the community. That's the more or less accepted figure of incidence of NPD.
Can anything be done for the person suffering with narcissistic personality disorder?
No.
No intervention?
No, that's the one thing I went after. I wanted to find a way to reach my dad, and I looked into it. I was tireless trying to find it. I spent 9 months researching it, and the one thing I learned was it's incurable.
It's incurable. So now this is where, listen, I have no doubt this is what you've been told. But maybe I'm going to be a bit narcissistic now. I don't want to believe that. I do not want to believe it.
I'll tell you what, I'll qualify it. I'll tell you what.
Go on.
There is a very low incidence of turnaround. Okay, now you've caught
there
me
is
out.
Some. There is some, you see. You said a minute ago there's no cure for it. Go on.
There's no cure, but there is a trick to them gaining self-awareness. And there are three things that might happen. One is imprisonment can cause it. It's not definite. Multiple marriage breakdown can cause the self-awareness. And I think multiple bankruptcy. Now, the most famous narcissist in the world is a guy called Sam Vaknin, who wrote, I think, I could be wrong about this, a key book in this is called, I think it's Malignant Self-Love by Sam Vaknin. And he's the world's most famous self-aware narcissist. And what he's done is he was in prison for bankruptcy, for fraud. And he peeked at the notes of the psychiatrist that was he had to meet with for, you know, it was part of his rehabilitation. And he saw narcissism was written down. And then he started looking into it. And he caught himself in the act of being a malignant NPD. And he has dedicated himself to trying to draw attention to this. And there's a lot of videos by a guy called Richard Grannon, who is one of the absolute heroes of the survivors community. Richard Grannon, Spartan Life Coach. They're buddies, him and Sam Vatkin.
Is that right? So Sam has changed his life then?
And what he's done.
And can have normal relationships, no?
Well, what Richard says, because Richard's not a narcissist, I hope he's not. he's one of the most famous of the community. But what Richard says Sam's done is he's made him, by making himself the most famous narcissist
right,
in the world.
I can see where this is
he's
going.
He's kind of leveraged it and made himself. Do you see what he's done?
Yeah.
He's kind of gone like, so instead of being destructive, he's become affirmative. They can't stop being a narcissist. But at least he can deploy it.
I've just had a message from Sam. I can't do right for doing wrong. No, I'm only joking. But maybe he has turned his life around. Look, I believe that every human being on planet Earth can become self-aware. If the often mentioned Caroline, my other half, my better half, if she was here right now, I think she'd say, "I've been with Richie 18 years," she would say. And there have been times during the periods we've been together when he's been self-obsessed. When he's been obsessed with who he is and what he does to the detriment of our relationship. I'm sure she would say that. I'd be the first to admit that. But, and you know, and anybody who does a public broadcasting, no matter what the level, you've got to...
You have to have a bit of that.
No doubt. And no doubt more than a hint of diva. More than a bit of it. Cool. She would say that. Precious.
Me too, Richie. Me too. I mean, I wanted to be a big rock star, you know, what the fuck?
We all did. Every bloody one of us. But I could, and she might say, but the point I was going to make, again, I don't want to be talking, I genuinely don't want to be talking about myself, how ironic, but I don't want to. But what I'm saying is, when this has come up, I like to think that I've been self-aware enough to say, yeah, you are, this is not good behaviour. You know, you're not all important. And she's important, and her life is important, and her work is important, and her feelings are important. So you got to roll, you got to roll back a bit. And I think she might argue now. But I think at times over the years I've been successful in doing that. So I like to believe. I believe what you've said about your dad. I would never rule anybody out. I have to. This is killing me actually. I want to believe that every human being has it within himself or herself to come to a catharsis, to realise this is wrong. I can change. But within the community, you're telling me the prevailing opinion is no, they can't divest themselves of the narcissistic personality disorder. They can't. That's the prevailing opinion.
They might gain self-awareness or insight, but it's pathological. It goes deep. It's not Like you know, if you're dealing with a pathological liar, or you're dealing with, you know, or if it was a psychopath, it's sociopathy. It's a sociopathic condition.
We've had loads of comments. Can I read a couple?
Sure.
Let me read a couple.
I must throw in 40 seconds at the end of this, if you don't mind.
I will make sure you do. Right, we're going to go till about 7:02. To everybody else, I've had 37 individual missed calls. Blame Paul for it.
Paul, it's my fault, guys.
Paul just had to be interesting, didn't he? He had to have an interesting call.
I'm sorry.
Hugely interesting. So,
I'll tell you what, as all the times I haven't phoned up, as all them times as well.
You could have phoned up other times. Listen, thanks, Paul. To those of you who have been trying to get on, 37 individual people, we'll do this again next Thursday. And we'll do it from 5:30 till 7:00. And I'll make sure Paul is not in the country.
No, Paul is not ringing in.
Let me read a couple of comments. This is from a listener anonymously who says that his or her cousin was married to a pathological narcissist. He nearly killed her emotionally and alleges this listener enjoyed every moment of attempting to destroy her. he got off on it, actually. Her pain seemed to feed him. They are often very clever and they are brilliant at manipulating people, says that listener, who went on to say that ego and narcissism are different things, that we all need a bit of ego in life. What about that story of getting off on the manipulation and destroying the other person?
It's called supply. It's called narcissistic supply. And they can't live without it. They have to... It's like an addiction. It's an addiction. They're addicted. As serious as any chemical addiction. They have to eat you.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very sad.
We've had loads of people. It sounds tragic because the way you describe the genesis of it, you know, ultimately what you're saying is it is a condition and the person with it can't really do anything about it. People don't become like this. It sounds like they are conditioned very early on. I mean, you mentioned earlier on that some children predisposed to it, I think you said. Because I was listening to everything you said intently.
I suspect it's a foggy area. There might be predisposition. I just don't know. But the story in the community is that it's generated by that particular circumstance of one parent being overly loving and one parent being overly cold. That's the present thinking. Where we're up to.
Can I ask you a couple of quickfire questions? Because there's been more than a few on Twitter. So a couple of quickfire questions, as quick as you can, Paul. How likely is the person with acute narcissistic personality disorder, how likely are they to be physically abusive to their other half and their children?
That could vary on lots of other factors. You can have narcissists that are violent, and narcissists that aren't remotely violent, narcissists that are sexually abusive, and narcissists that aren't. It's a spectrum. That part of it is all down to other factors. It's absolutely possible and can be absolutely missing as well. Like I never had any physical abuse myself, but the psychological abuse was traumatizing.
So because it sounds like this is still very new to the mental health professionals, I think it is relatively still new to them.
And that's my last 40 seconds I want to get into when we get later on, by the way, but yeah.
Right, because we're going to do that now in a second. That was kind of a very common question. How likely are they to be violent? A lot of people are saying that being a pathological liar, but being brilliant at it, being very persuasive and being brilliant, that's a dead giveaway, that, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget, they believe it.
They believe their own lies.
Yes, they're not lying. They're constructing reality.
Right, they're building a reality around them that isn't.
Yeah, they think it's real. It's real because they said it happened that way.
Paul, I tell you what, we're 5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to give you the last 90 seconds, right? And then I'm going to get out of the programme.
Right, here's where I was going, right from... Oh, bless you, we can say something.
No, just before you do, thanks for phoning up. Thanks for being first. I think it's an eye-opener. It's a real eye-opener, mate, and it's educated me to something I didn't know very much about. I'd only read about it once or twice in the broadsheet newspapers, so it's been fascinating listening to you. You've been very candid about your own experiences. I think that's unbelievably courageous. I really do find that courageous. So thank you. 90 seconds. You wanted the last word on it. It's your last word. Go ahead, and thanks again.
Well, here's the terrifying thing. So... I wanted to get the CPTSD, the complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I wanted to get it diagnosed because I'm having trouble with things like getting recognition when it comes to social security and stuff like that. And I've had that awful Daniel Blake sort of experience of trying to explain my illness and not being understood. So I went to see a doctor who said, got me an appointment. I took a letter from my dad that it showed that he was abusive. Like, the letter had some stuff in it that was pretty cold, and you wouldn't speak that way to a son who looked after your wife all that time. I got an appointment with a psychiatrist, and they diagnosed me all right. They diagnosed me.
Diagnosed you?
Personality disorder.
No way.
Yes.
What a twist that is. I didn't see that coming.
Yep.
Wow. Yep. This was somebody appointed by the state to look into your personal situation.
Yeah. Yep.
Holy mother!
And I'm still trying to cope with it. I, you know, I mean, think about this, right? Whatever I do now, right, that's going to hang over me until I get that reversed or challenged. I'm trying to get it challenged right now.
What about the therapist that you went to see? Those sessions, are those not relevant in your
they
case?
They don't care. They're not. She's in the private sector. They don't care. They don't take any. They don't have to. They don't have to care. And the reason I was ringing up about this, and we'll, you know, like, I'll email you if you want to talk about this anymore by email. I can do that. But the thing I'm scared about, right, is what on earth are they thinking? Like, because the key thing that MPDs don't have is empathy. You can't provide 7 years full time care under incredible duress, sleep deprivation alone, and so some of it was outrage. For 18 months, I didn't get to sleep till 5:30 in the morning, right, and then I was up again at 11. For 18 months. Most people, that will destroy most people, just 2 weeks of that.
Paul, but I don't doubt you. Hang on a second. I don't doubt you for a minute. Did they give any protracted, detailed reasoning for saying that you had acute narcissistic...
I challenged him immediately, and he said, I'm not a therapist.
This is a DWP arsehole, right?
This is a trainee. He was a trainee, I'll give him that, but he was a trainee psychiatrist. And then eventually I got to see his boss on a return visit. And I asked, how on earth can you justify this diagnosis after I've looked after my mother? She said people with personality disorders make decisions that ordinary people wouldn't.
That is a Hitchcockian twist there you've thrown at me there, Paul.
If they're doing it to me, because I'm not the only one. I've heard about it happening in the community as well. But I thought, because I looked after my mother, I thought they would never, ever think that. They wouldn't better cook it up. But if they're doing it to me, what the hell is going on?
Well, maybe what's going on is what's happening to every person with illness, whether physical or psychological, in this country. I'm not saying you're ill, Paul, but you've obviously suffered a trauma.
No, my health has taken a real kick in.
And what they're doing is they're trying to find more and more reasons, exotic and not so exotic, to deny people the help they need.
That's why I brought it to you today. That's where I was going from the off. This is what I wanted to bring to the show.
Never saw that coming.
It's outrageous. And anybody listening to this, they're completely within their rights to sort of listen to the show again and go, well, maybe he has got MPD. He talks about himself a lot. But on balance...
No, mate, you haven't. Listen, I've interviewed a million people. And I have a little bit of an insight into what people are like just from listening to them. You can tell a lot by listening and not seeing people, just listening to one. No, I don't get that from you at all. I think you're very sincere, you're very genuine. I don't find you to be self-absorbed or self-obsessed or self-pitying at all. And nothing remotely like it. Wow!
And you're a trained psychiatrist, dude.
Oh, Jesus. And what about, can you challenge that? Is there anything you can do about that?
I'm working on it. I've written to... I know we're out of time, by the way, but I'm starting a process by... I think what I will have to do is pay for a private psychiatric consultation with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah,
that's
but you,
I think I'll have, and then you, I'll better go. I think that's the only option.
But you said that they've dismissed the fact that a therapist diagnosed you as a victim of it because...
I'd have to find an accredited psychiatrist, but I think I'd have to go, I'll have to pay for it. I think I'll have to get a private Harley Street.
And that's not going to be cheap, is it?
No. But I think that's the only thing I can do.
I'll tell you what, Paul. You've blown me away there at the end. I mean, you blew me away anyway, talking about it. But, no, but I mean, at the end, telling us that... I mean, listen, I get... Hayden would endorse this if Hayden was here because he gets... to see a lot of the correspondence that comes through the website. We hear from a lot of people who have been screwed by the Department of Work and Pensions, people with genuine conditions that have taken a huge toll on them, psychologically as well as physically. And what this psychotic, insane, fucking evil government, and the one that went before it, tries to do is use the private sector to discredit people so that they don't have to help them financially.
It's like super gaslighting, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. I wish you the best with that, Paul.
You're the problem.
Come back, mate. Come back.
Complaining idiot. You're the problem.
You're the problem. Do me a favour. Obviously, you'll stay in touch. Obviously.
Yeah, man.
When there's any news on this, come back and tell us. We'll get you back on to tell us because the listeners have been absolutely blown away by what they've been listening to.
So grateful to you for having me on because it's been you're a real hero of mine. It's a joy to be on the show. Thank you for the time. It really means a lot. I'm going to go because I know you've got to close the show down, but thank you so much for the opportunity.
the pleasure is ours. If there's any reason for the independent media at all, this is it, so that people can talk about things that they wouldn't ordinarily get a chance to talk about. And thanks, mate. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yes, thanks,
good luck thank with you, it. And let us know how you get on with finding an accredited psychiatrist. And let us know.
I'll email you.
How, do. And let us know you get on with the bloody authorities, as they're called. Paul, you're an absolute star, mate. Thanks for coming on.
You too. Thank you.
Bye for now. What a story that is. Paul there. Paul is known on Twitter as Paul Paranoid. Talking there about experiencing life with a parent who has acute narcissistic personality disorder. The implications for the family. And how it affected him. But Paul is very generous in talking about how it affects the narcissistic personality afflicted parent themselves. Amazing stuff. Baby boomer, is that when it happened? Is that when we began to see more of this? The impact it has on society, on parenting. I think Paul said 1 in 100 is what they think by they, his peers, other victims of narcissistic personality disorder. Quite an astonishing story, that. And what a twist at the end there. Jesus wept, I never saw that coming. Thanks so much to Paul. We will get him back on, of course. We will do a follow-up. That's what we do. In the meantime, to those of you, 40 different people in the end tried to get on. The most ever, by the way. And I'm sure some of you wanted to get on to talk about that which Paul was talking about. So next Thursday, we'll give over the entire programme to the phone-in. And we'll get as many calls on as we can. Thanks for your patience and your understanding. But you couldn't interrupt Paul there, could you? I don't think so. Thanks again to him. Thanks to you for listening. I'll be back with you Sunday morning at the usual time of 11 o'clock for the newspaper review show. Until then, leaving you with Van the Man Morrison and one of my favourite tunes of all time, a song called Into the Mystic. Wow. Speak to you real soon. Bye for now. Bye.